What's up, everybody? Welcome back in to the Monday Mailbag with Mr. Nick Patrick. I'm your host, Cassio. Nick, good to see you again, buddy.
Hey, it's good to see you, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great, and I love seeing the feedback over ad-free shows. All the top guys and top gals, Nick, they are loving the show. They're interacting with us, and we thank them because if it wasn't for them, this show would be weird. We'd just be sitting here, not without any questions.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome, man.
All right, here we go. Let's rock and roll and get to the questions. Aaron just wants to know, what's the best match you were involved in either WCW or WWE?
Well, it's hard to say because I've been around for several different generations, and each generation kind of had its own thing, you know. Back in the day, it was hard to top a Harley Race Dusty Rhodes match back in that era, and or Tommy Rich Buzz Sawyer. They used to tear it up. I mean, that was another. But they weren't like classic, you know, your Flair Steamboat type of matches that people would think. But they had their own. You know, they weren't meant to be. You know, they were. You know, it was a different gimmick, a different angle. But that was a standout for that era. And
what about later on WWE?
WWE, I really enjoyed the two of them that stood out to me was JBL and John Cena, and JBL and Undertaker. Wow. Because those were all world title matches, most of them, and it was one was in the grooming of Cena. They paired him with JBL when he was young to get timing and psychology and become a good worker, that's why they had so many matches. They had a great run. I was a ref for a lot of that. And I always loved working with Undertaker and JBL. They were a blast to work with.
This is good. Brian Haremza brought this up. I saw a video going around the internet this week, and it was a montage of Eddie Guerrero cheating.
I saw that too. That was awesome.
Bryant said you were involved a lot in Eddie Guerrero's matches in WWE. Eddie was known to lie a lot. Did any of his in-ring lies make you laugh, or was it easy to keep a straight face? Because I brought it up because that video, I noticed how many times you were involved in him.
I worked a lot with Eddie because we interacted well. We had good timing. I like that one where he whacked me on the butt with the belt, that took, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but that took timing. If I'd have just turned right around before they had the interaction of throwing the belt back and forth, it took setting it up and then turning it at the right time and having to pay. And we didn't practice that. We knew what we wanted to do. It was just, it was workers working with each other, but, that was so much fun working with him. Eddie was awesome. But
on the one where he took the tag rope and moved it down the.
Oh yeah, right down to the middle. My funniest Eddie moment is it wasn't captured. It was we were overseas in Germany, and it was a long tour. And everybody ran wild back in the day when we was going overseas. And it was toward the end of the tour, and the guys all went out to the bar the night before. And the owner of the bar was taking care of the guys, hooking them up with drinks and stuff. And ended up, Eddie had words with one of the regulars, and they were about to hook it up. And the damn owner of the bar, come up from behind Eddie and grabbed Eddie like a rear chin, trying to hold him back from messing up one of his regulars. But it didn't choke him out or nothing. He was just grabbing him, actually trying to stop him. But the boys took it and started ribbing him, saying that he got choked out, right? And he was like, oh, man, F you guys, right? So the next night was the last night of the tour. So all the guys buzz me and says, Nick, one time during the match somewhere, at least when he's got a guy in a corner doing something, grab him from behind in that rear chin and say, this is like the bar owner. So I went, oh, hell. I said, okay, I'll do it. So he was teaming up with Scotty Riggs. I don't even remember who they was working with, right? But the time come up and Eddie had a guy in a corner and he was firing him, and I grabbed him from behind and I went, this is like in the bar last night, huh? And he went, oh, and he said, and then everybody still, he could see everybody in the ring was laughing, and he knew that I ripped. He goes, I'm going to get you back. He says, I have to pay you back. I said, it's okay, man. And I, so we kept working the match and working the match. And back in the day, I used to wear coaching pants when I refereed, you know, like football coaches wear on the sidelines with the elastic pants. Little snap on. Yeah. You know, and I didn't have a belt. You know, I didn't need one, you know. So so we have the match, and at the end, Eddie and Scotty Riggs went over, and I went to raise their hand. As I raised their hands, I was in the middle. He looked at me and says, I'm going to pull your pants down. And I was like, okay, I'm crazy. I'm going to have kind of goofy anyway, right? I said, sure. And I had their hands up, and him and Scotty Riggs looked at each other, and they both reached over, and they pulled my pants down to my ankles. But what they didn't know, I've been working all night long, and I was sweating, and my underwear stuck to my pants, and everything went down to my ankles. And the look on Eddie and Scotty's face, they went from laughing because they pulled the rib to like, oh God, we've gone too far. And I did the old thing, man, where I covered my stuff up, of course, but I jumped down and I looked like a dog trying to scratch his butt on the concrete going across the mat till I rolled out on the floor. And I did the old run with my pants down with my ankles, giving it, took a bump until I got my stuff up. And I mean, and the people went nuts, you know, but it was all I had lived, and nobody was expecting. I certainly wasn't expecting it, but I was like, and when they went down, and I had my hands up like this, and then they let go of my hands, and I'm standing like this, and because they like pulled their hands down and did it, and I was like, "Hey," and I'm like, "Oh my God!" And I dropped down. So it was like a reverse rib, you know, almost, you know, because they got me really, really good, but they got themselves pretty good too, because man, they with that look, they're like, "Oh my God, we've gone way too far with this one, man."
Everybody got to see Nick Patrick.
Goodness. Way more than they wanted to.
All right, let's keep it going. Patrick Ruth, how exhausting was sold out 1997?
It was tough. It was more mentally taxing. I was, cause I've done, you know, back in the day, referees, did the entire show a lot of times, you know, in smaller promotions and even in bigger promotions at a house show, you know, they would just line it up where you didn't have to take a bump unless it was in the last one, you know, so you could still keep coming back out. You look kind of stupid if somebody lays you out and 5 minutes later you're not selling it and you do three more matches after that. You know, what the hell, you know, so they had to think about it a little bit. That's why they ended up getting so many refs, because they tried to put more oomph in every match, and the creativity of, you know, trying to get where you want, you know, they come up with so many ref bumps that it got to where it was just got out of hand and crazy. Yeah. You know, as soon as you see the ref take a bump, everybody's like, look, okay, here they're going in to finish. You know what I'm saying? But, what was the original question? What was you getting?
You're talking about how mentally taxing sold out.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. There were so many matches, and I had to remember, you know, everything that was going on, and each individual match, the guys would want to get with me and kind of go over, you know. So it got to a point where I was having to hear so much that I just told each match, because I knew all the guys and I worked with all of them. I said, look, I've got so much to remember. If you've got a spot that involves me, where you physically need me to do something, you know, take a bump or do something, then tell me. Otherwise, I'm just going to follow everything you do. And that's pretty much what I did for a lot of the night. You know, I knew, you know, I had a skeleton of what was going on, but man, I didn't want to know all the fine points. So, you know, and the hardest time was to try to find when there was going to be enough break time between, you know, with vignettes and stuff downtown for me to run out of that ring and go find time to go pee real quick and get back up in the ring before it was time for me to be back in the ring. But, I physically, it was okay. Yeah. I slept really good that night, you know, and it was hard to do, but it was more mentally taxing to me, you know, trying to remember everything and, you know, cause I didn't want to slight anybody in their match, you know, because a lot of guys will want to tell you every single move they want to do, you know, okay, well, my music's going to play. And when it gets to this beat, I'll come out to the ring. And I'm like, well, dude, I don't need to know all of that. You know, let me know. Let's get to the grits in this thing here, man.
Unless you're knocking me down, I need to focus on the finish.
Yeah.
What did you do afterwards? Did you call it a night, or did you go out?
I got a six pack, and I went there and I had a little powwow with one of my buddies, and I drank a couple of cold beers, and I went and turned a movie on in my room. Not a pay movie, HBO. And I just, cause I didn't care. And I got laid there and I fell out. I had to be on the first flight out the next morning anyway, because that's how they do.
You made the flight?
Oh, yeah.
That's all that matters.
Yeah. Yeah. You always make that going home flight.
You got to get that going home flight. Corey Barnes hit us up and he says, Nick, did fellow referees act differently towards you backstage when you were the NWO ref? Did they have feelings of animosity or want to be in your shoes as the NWO ref?
No, everybody kind of thought it was cool, if they did, they never said anything to me, and then it never affected any of our friendships or any of our working relationships in any way. It was just a storyline. Everybody was kind of glad one of us got a break, because I ended up becoming an agent shortly, after all that. And because I was always one to look out for the boys, that was kind of what held me back from wanting to advance and being an agent, even with Vince and them. I'm not office enough. You know what I mean? And when I say that term office, that if you're an insider, you understand, and guys that's been around understand office. When I say I'm not office enough, I mean, I'm not like inside going to go run and tell people what's going on in the locker room, what's going on in the road, what's going to get it. I was on more pro boys because I was one of the boys for so long, yeah. And they took us and they run us so hard, especially when, because I started from the territory days, but once we got into WCW, WWE and traveling the world, man, I mean, hell, back in the day, I didn't get days off unless I was hurt, but man, it was really, really hard then because we were like going, especially when I went to WWE, I was on a travel team, man. I was going overseas somewhere at least once a month.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm a million miler on Delta, and I was gold and platinum and all those different airlines.
Once
and stuff.
A month overseas.
Yeah. Somewhere different once a month, and sometimes, those are hard, because depending on where you go, sometimes like they would run a West Coast run. And then go to Asia and, do their TV out there, like in California, somewhere out in the West Coast, or whatever. And then they'd go over to Asia, Japan or whatever, or Philippines or whatever. And then come back and he'd hit another West Coast, like it hit Southern California before you left, and you'd hit Northern California on your way back or Chicago or somewhere, there's a lot of, it was like, then you'd be gone 3 weeks in a row. Wow. Before you got to go home. And that to me was really hard, but
that's traveling, my friend.
Yes, sir, Bob, man. I've seen enough of the world. I love seeing the world, and I've seen it several times. But I've seen it enough times where like, okay, I you can tell me about it now.
Just the front yard's all you need to see, ain't it?
Yes, sir. Backyard. Yes. Yeah.
All right, here we go. Let's go back to it. Two Count Kyle wants to know. Nick, how important do you think size and physique is to wrestling nowadays? He said, we've seen a significant move in current wrestling from the giant bodybuilder types to smaller, lighter bodies. What's your stance? Do you like the old airport test physiques, or is work weight and relatability ultimately what matters? That's a big question, but what's
your thoughts? Yeah, because it encompasses a lot. Because there's different gimmicks. You want your guys to look like an athlete. That doesn't mean that every guy has to be a prototype. There's big guys. There's heavy guys. There's ladies too. I think it's probably changing, but because Vince set the standard of the industry, and he liked big guys and big physiques so much. That unless you really, really had something that stands out, if you were smaller, like a Benoit or Eddie, those are classic examples of guys that weren't big guys, but they made it to that level. you had to be able to stand out like them, or you're just going to be stuck in the middle, you know, or lower, you know, than if you don't have that physique and what the standard is looking for. Yeah, there's a lot of guys out there now, high flyer guys, boom, that they're not all muscled up, and that's cool too, you know. And because I don't want to see a whole card full of muscle heads. You know what I mean, I want to see it. I want to see different styles. I want to see different looks. I want to see the whole thing. So I don't really think there is a prototype. I do think the work is the most important thing. But the most important thing, when I say the work, I mean more than just moves. I mean storytelling, you know, because storytelling, those are the guys that are, check out the main event on WrestleMania. How often has it been a table, ladders, and chairs or anything? It's always the guys that are storytellers, and that's the money spot. You know, so to me, if that's a spot you're aspiring to be in, then yeah, because have the body, because that's what will get you there quicker. But if you don't have that, you know, you can still get there the other way, but man, you better have something really, really special if you don't have that body.
Yeah. We, you know, our buddy, our mutual friend here, Road Dog, he said it kind of tongue in cheek and got some heat for it, but he did kind of mean it. When he said before, wins and losses in wrestling don't really matter. And what he meant was, if as long as I'm invested in the story, I don't care which one that particular match. I might lose this one, and then I'm going to root harder for you to win the next one. So it's,
I tell it's my kids,
like you just said, the story.
I tell my kids that I train all the time, and I still say this when I wrestle, and if I ever had the opportunity to wrestle again, if my old body all of a sudden got rejuvenated somehow, I would rather do a job in a 5-star match that the people talk about for the rest of wrestling history than to get my hand raised in something, anything less, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so winning and losing, it's match quality. It's storytelling. It's
part of the story, not the story.
Yeah, it's just a part of the story is all it is. You know, it's we're storytelling, guys. You can't get all wrapped on it. If you want to be all wrapped up in winning and losing, and go and get into MMA and see how long your streak goes there.
Yeah. All right, let's keep it rolling. Carl Hayes, he's got a question, and he hit us with a joke. If he's going to hit us with a joke, I'm going to tell it to you, Nick Patrick.
Okay.
Why couldn't the green pepper practice archery?
Why is that?
He didn't have an arrow.
That's pretty hot, man. That's pretty hot.
Nicely done with the habanero, Tom. I like that.
Habaneros will light you up, man. Woo.
His question is, did you smoke your own brisket? And if so, do you have any advice? He said, I got a Rectech a few months back and I'm onto the brisket experience stage. Nick, are you a big brisket guy?
I have to tell you, if I'm going to have brisket, I'm turning that over to my son, because my youngest son, I mean to tell you, he could open up his own restaurant and his grilling is unbelievable. I mean, he's in the kitchen too. I mean, he can cook anything, but man, he's got the smoker thing down with the ribs and with the brisket and he made salmon for us the other night on the cedar plank, but it was smoked and the way he seasons it up and whatever glaze, I don't know what, cause he puts several different things, you know, he's got his own recipe, but man, I'm going to tell you, my son right now has got, if I'm going to have brisket, I'm going to have Tony Hamilton make the brisket for me.
Carl Hayes, send your brisket to Tony Hamilton. He'll smoke it and mail it back. How about that?
Yeah, buddy. I mean, tell you, you won't regret it.
All right, Bobby, KF5GTX. He said, Nick, what was your reaction when Hogan turned heel at Bash at the Beach 1996?
I loved it because I hadn't seen enough heat to piss people off and generate a reaction like they did in a long, long time since the old territory days when we was really trying to make believers out of people and sometimes had to fight, you know, and those people were hot. And I loved how it was that that moment of like, oh, what, that silence for just a second. What the hell just happened? And then all of a sudden, whoa, here it come like a tsunami wave. The people throw, they were mad, man. They were, I thought it was awesome. It was an awesome moment in wrestling history. And I thought, like I said, it generated heat like I hadn't seen since old school heat back in the day. And I thought it was great.
Yeah. Watching it back now, you appreciate the moment. I would say as a fan, yeah. I was just like them. I wish I could have thrown something through my television. I was hot at everybody. Oh,
they set the hook, man. It was great.
They got us. Richie the Heel wants to know, Nick and Cassio, what's your favorite Little Debbie snack? Nick, we actually went over this a little bit on my podcast, but if you had to pick one Little Debbie, just one, I'll let you pick four on mine. Richie the Heel, that's why he's a heel. He's only let you pick him. One Little Debbie, what are you going
with? The one that's in my refrigerator right now is the Little Debbie peanut butter wafers, the little peanut butter bars.
Oh, the peanut butter bars.
The little wafer, cookie that's got the chocolate on it. That's in my refrigerator right now.
That's a low-key banger right there. Nicely done.
Thank you.
I'm going to go probably if I just had to pick one, I'd probably go Nutty Buddy. I'm a Nutty Buddy fanatic. So
yeah, those are good. Those are good.
Again, if anybody knows me and my love, I'll go with any of them. I'll roll with any of them. All right. Jeff Ronquillo wants to know, Nick, you are a legend, my friend.
Well, thank you, sir.
Our questions, he says.
Thank you, sir.
Wants to know, did a fan ever yell something at you that absolutely pissed you off?
No, not really, because it was my job. As a ref, I was just, you know, you're going to have that one every now and anyway. I kind of thought it was funny, to be honest with you. You know, somebody, if it was witty enough, if they were crude or something, and I try to ignore them because there's kids there, you know, getting a verbal argument with a mark, for God's sakes, you know, that's never a winning. Nothing good can come from that, you know. But no, not really. You know, when I was a heel, I wanted them to be mad at me. You know, you can say whatever you want, you know, and then I've done my job. So,
and you ever remember anyone making you laugh, making you pop in the ring with whatever they said? Maybe a couple of times, nothing major.
Certain people, when they would come up and act like they wanted to do, you know, the Fred Sanford routine, like they were going to, you know, especially if the spotlight got on them and they got a little pop from the people around.
Oh, sure.
That sometimes would pop me a little bit, but, for the most part, I was kind of, you know, it's not focusing on one person, because as a worker, you got to watch what's going on around you, especially if you're out getting heat, you know? So I wouldn't try. And I tried hard to keep the spotlight here instead of over there. You know what I mean? So
he also says, did you have any fan run-ins where you had to give them the old Mike Chioda and kick the crap out of them?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Back in the day. I mean, I got a story. I was working in Huntington, West Virginia, and I was working. This is 82 or 83. Yes. It was during the Buzz Sawyer Tommy Rich feud.
All right.
So it had to be 83-ish, somewhere around there. So we're in Huntington, West Virginia, and Tommy and Buzz are working. And this guy had got, back in the day, that you could get these Mr. X masks out of the wrestling magazines, you know, and you could order them, and they were just little, you know, like little made from Mexico masks or something. Sure. You know, they were the cheap made ones, like the old, you could get at WCW, put out those little purple and gold ones back in the day. They were kind of like that, right? So, you know, we didn't have all the big rails and stuff yet. You know, it was just kind of like a little rope deal still, you know, that's how far back we're going. So all of a sudden, this guy had ordered one of those masks. He put the mask on, and he'd come running in, and he dove in under the bottom rope, was going to try to get at Buzz, because Buzz was getting some heat on Tommy. Well, he didn't get to his feet, and Buzz stomped at him like two or three times. The guy rolled right back out. So now the police thought the guy was part of the show because he had the mask on, right? So I stepped out. So I stepped out on the apron, and now this guy ain't even looking at me, but he got a pop from the people. So he tried to milk the people, and he come running in to dive under that bottom rope for a second run at Buzz. And when he did, I took two steps and I punted him right in the mouth. Bam! And I mean, honest to God, I kicked him so hard that I saw some teeth fly out and into people. Yeah, I kicked him that hard. And it snapped his head back, and he stumbled all the way back to the rope. Now, when that happened, the police realized, oh, shit, that was real.
Yeah.
And this guy ain't part of it. They come in. So when I kicked him, he staggered back against the rope, and I could see blood all around his mouth. And he's just standing there looking at me. And I thought, holy sheep shit. I just kicked this guy in the mouth with everything I got. I seen several teeth go flying this way. And he's standing here looking at me. What the hell am I going to do now? What's next? I'm getting geared up to fight this guy. Now, yeah. Like, holy crap. And the cops bum rushed him. And when they grabbed him, as soon as they grabbed him, his knees buckled and he went down. Evidently, he was out on his feet. And just standing there looking at me, you know. And so they took him down and they took him out the door. So we had the match. So now I'm in Huntington, West Virginia. And this is back in the day. And we had great houses and stuff, but I'm not, you know, it's kind of, you know, West Virginia is a little bit different. You know, it was more, it wasn't as modern as some of the big cities. And so I'm thinking, man, this guy could be somebody's cousin down here, you know? So I'm going in, and after the match, I jumped in the shower and I'm power showering. Man, I'm going to throw my clothes on. I'm getting the hell out of Dodge. Three cops come walking in. We need to talk to the referee. I'm like, oh, dear God. I'm just standing in the shower, man. So now I come out of the shower. I'm naked. I grab my towel. I'm wrapped up. And I'm thinking, oh, dear God, they're going to take me to jail. I'm naked in the damn towel. And they said, I said, guys, I'm sorry, man. He wasn't part of us. He wasn't one of us. I thought he was going to hurt one of our guys. And I didn't mean to hit him. They go, no, you're all right. Said he put one of our guys in a ditch about a month ago. We've been looking for a way to get him, and you just solved our problem for us.
What?
And I said, you're all right. And I said, well, thank you, guys. And then they went on out the door, and I went ahead and still hurried up and got the hell on out of Dodge just in case somebody changed their mind.
What do you mean he ran somebody off the road?
He ran one of the police officers in their car off into a ditch.
Whoa.
And they were trying find a way they were waiting for him to mess up.
I knew it was him, but couldn't prove it.
They knew, and they were waiting to get him, and all of a sudden there he showed up at the matches drunk.
Oh.
And I guess they didn't recognize that they had him until
he had the mask.
Yeah, I punted him. I mean, straight on, I kicked. They told me I knocked like five of his teeth out. They said, I mean, he may have been missing some in the first place, but I'm not trying to be an ass, but I know I saw a couple of them fly. It was like, man.
Look, I'm from Alabama. We can't make fun of many people. So if I can take a shot at West Virginia, I'm sure that wasn't the first tooth that he lost.
I'm pretty sure that
was
that
five
too.
Missing. I don't know if you got all five.
Yeah, I might have got one or two.
He also, Jeff Ronquillo, wants to know, you mentioned barbecuing, so it must have been a theme on the chat, which we love. We love y'all asking anything you want to, Mr. Nick Patrick. He said, do you have a favorite brew while barbecuing?
My son has some different, my son that does the cooking, he likes all these different local brews, and he tries different ones, and he's find Wicked Weed has a good local brew, and Dog Face or Dog something. Dog's Head. Yeah, I've seen a couple of them, you know, and one of them comes in a purple can. I can't think of the name of India something.
IPA, anyway, Purple Haze?
Yeah. That's one. But he tries, I like those. I like trying different ones. And when I'm over in Europe, I like, especially in Germany, I like Stella Blonde Draft.
Oh, yeah.
And
that was good beer.
Yeah. And that draft, the real draft German.
Yeah. Stella, why are you over there?
Oh, man. Woo! Yeah. Yes, that's a good deal.
All right. Well, I ain't mad at that. Thomas Conefree, please. I hope I said that right. But Thomas says, with WCW, I always enjoyed their tag team matches. Nick, do you think there's any chance we might see more tag team matches now that a World Tag Match headlined a WrestleMania. You know, of course, they just had the Usos, and Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens just headlined that WrestleMania. So you hope it leads to more matches.
I hope so. I've always loved tag teams. There's just so much action, so much storyline, so many things. So there's like a three-ring circus almost, you know, but you got to control it. You got to control where the eyes are going instead of like, oh, what do I look at? You know what I mean? That's why you see, like, sometimes in those three-way matches, one guy will get hit and he'll be down on the floor for 5 minutes selling, you know?
Yeah.
And then while the other two go through their deal, you know, but tag matches is timing and psychology and storytelling, and it takes everybody in the ring, all referee, workers, everybody, announcer, manager, everybody being on cue and on the same page. And if you don't, when you have that, you have magic. And a lot of these young kids now can produce that. And that's what I love. I hate when it's just people thrown together and it's, okay, I'm going to go and do my stuff. And then you go do your stuff. And then he's going to go do his stuff. And I'm going to let him do his stuff. You know, it's not storytelling. It's not people working as a team. It's not cutting the ring in half and getting them in trouble and making them have to fight their way out of your corner and having them make that desperation tag. I mean, there's just so much storytelling that goes along with tag matches and action. It keeps going too. You know, it's, you know, when the guys take a bump and the guys down selling, then the guys on the apron are doing something or the manager's doing something. You know, it's more of a flow, you know, it flows a little bit more steadily than a singles match does. And I've always loved tag matches. I guess because I grew up with my dad being a tag team master. And you know, I've always just, and as a ref, I always volunteered to take tag matches at WWE. A lot of, because some of the guys didn't like doing the tag matches for some reason. I'm like, man, I'll take it. And I volunteered. I wanted them because I love doing tag matches.
That was fun. You could see your passion right there, man. That was,
yeah,
fun,
man. I'm telling you, it, man. I hope they really add to it, because there's some kids that's got some great gimmicks. You know, you can introduce gimmicks with tag teams.
I was gonna say, what do you think about a six-man belt? You know, that's a big thing now, a triad or whatever you want to call it. What do you think about a six-man? Do you think that's a little too much? Do you like it at the four, the tag team?
I think if they're going to do it, they're going to have to go whole hog with it, you know, or else it's just going to be, you know, if they only put a mediocre effort into it, then mediocre is all it's ever going to be. You know, I think it would be cool. But
you don't think it's too
– well, I think they need to focus on –
AEW's got the trios belt, so they've started doing that.
I think they need to focus on getting the tag team, regular tag team division up and hot to where, you know, it's like, you know, it's hard to put a couple of tag matches on a card unless you're a big promotion.
Right.
You know what I mean? Just for payroll sake, you know, but, you know, tag matches, like I said, just action, nonstop, something's going, moving, you know, and it's a chance for more work. And I'm hoping that they, I love to see the new characters. I like the Viking Raiders, and you know, it's
good stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and they work hard. You know, big kids do some pretty amazing stuff, man. The Usos, love watching those kids, man.
Sure.
I remember when they're just little boys coming to the matches with their dad, you know, and I'm thinking, well, they're going to be in the business one day, and sure as hell, here they are.
Bray Wyatt, not only did they get in, they did it.
Bray Wyatt and his brother. Hell, I remember down the old WCW tapings, Mark Rotunda and his wife would bring the boys. They were little boys. They had a big female Rottweiler. And that female Rottweiler would watch those boys like a hawk, man. She was just like super protective. She was cool. That's what made me want to get one down the road, was I watched how protective she was over those awesome boys. And nobody made no sudden move toward those boys. I can't see, right?
She was but mom she and was, dog, right?
Yeah, but she wasn't snappy and snarly.
Not aggressive,
she was very smart and good temperament, but man, you could tell that head was wrinkled up and she was watching those kids, man. What are you doing over there? You know, it was cool to watch, man. Made me want one.
If you've had dogs, you can realize the difference between an aggressive dog and a mama dog, like that protective.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to do anything. I'm just keeping my eye on them and let's see.
Yeah. We're just wondering, that little head gets all wrinkled up, man. They get that look.
They're engaged. They're engaged the whole time. Yeah. And just a couple more. Jason wants to hit us up. He said, hi, Mr. Nick Patrick.
Hello there.
He said, this question may have already been asked already. However, it has been addressed, but we look, this is the part of the mailbag. You jump in anytime you want, ask whatever question and Nick will answer it. But hey, he says, when WWE bought WCW and your contract was picked up, what were some of the biggest changes from how WCW was compared to WWE? What were some of the biggest changes behind the scenes?
More like a team in WWE than WCW. WCW, some of the big stars had their own private locker rooms and private catering and private and you could or couldn't go in and out of them, you know. You don't have all that. You know, even Undertaker dresses with guys, with the rest of the guys. You know, he'll pick his spot, you know, and everybody lets him have his spot. And he deserves it because he's earned that damn spot, you know. So, you know, but he don't have his own catered locker room, you know. And then WCW had that. They created, you know, they had a lot of monsters, but they made their own monsters. You know, that was it was hard to get a direct answer a lot of times. If you had, you know, serious question about something at WCW, it seemed like there was a lot of people wanting to be Chiefs and not enough Indians in them. And you'd always get, you know, you know, if you want to get a damn answer at WWE, you go and you got enough ass, you go up to Vince and talk to him. He wants you to, you know, he respects people that do that. You'll get a straight answer from him. You know, I mean, not everybody likes him. I'm not a big Vince guy. Don't get me wrong. But he'll give you the time of day, and if you show him respect, he'll show you respect.
If you didn't go straight to Vince, who would you go straight to?
Well, it wouldn't have been John Laurinaitis. to me, if I had to really talk to somebody and it wouldn't have been Vince, I'd have tried to talk to Jerry Briscoe.
Okay. Not a bad guy to talk to, by the way.
Yeah, I've known him since I was a kid, you know, so. He'd have been the one I'd tried to talk to.
And last but not least, Bryant Haremza hit us with a second question, and we'll wrap up after this. He says, you mentioned on the last episode being the head referee for SmackDown. So he wants to know, what responsibilities do you have as a head referee as compared to just a referee?
I had to sit in on production meetings and assign who had what matches. And
which ref gets assigned to which one?
Yeah, I had to listen into what was being done and assign people to who did what, and that's really basically it. Once that was done, to make sure that everybody was there to back somebody up in case somebody took a bump or got hurt or something. And, you know, just kind of, you know, it wasn't like I was a cheerleader or nothing. All I really did was work with the guys, and I tried to rotate it up to where it was fair. You know, I didn't want to be the guy that always took the main event all the time, but they do put you in that spot for a reason, you know? So, yeah. You know, and fortunately there's several matches with as much television as they put out, just because you're on that last match. There's matches that are just as important as that last match all throughout the card, your opener. I mean, that's just, man, even in my shows, I run in the local level. I like to start my opener off with somebody that's going to come out and go, bam. I mean, they may not always, and a lot of my guys, they work both, you know, and I say you might not always work smart, but you work hard always, you know. We can teach smart, but you're always going to get, we're hungry, you know, and that's what I put out there for my first matches. But I like to see that, and I like to open it up with some bam, some guys that are going to go out there and move, you know. They can tell a story, but not a car crash spotty, but spotty enough to get them up, you know. Yeah. Car crash spotty could come later on in the car, you know, but, you know, so, but I love opening it hot, you know, with guys that can tell a story, but are upbeat tempo, that work hard and work hungry.
Your head referee, is there a match that comes up where they go, by the way, they request so-and-so to ref this match, they request
yeah, sometimes.
Is that rare, or is that just every now and then?
No, that Earl got recommended a lot because a lot of guys liked him, and I had a couple of guys recommend, you know, that did that with me. JBL did that a lot with me too, you know. Then
that's a trust factor built in.
Yeah, you know, and it's really a lot of times I ask because you may have done their match on the road, and it worked out well. They were
working out some of those. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, they want the same guy that was in there with them from the road sometimes, you know, but, other than that, you know, all the guys up there were capable. If they wasn't capable, they wasn't there long. It wasn't my job to fire them. You know, they would, you know, they can tell, you know, you didn't stick around long if you didn't know what you was doing up there as a ref.
When you were head referee for SmackDown, do you remember ballpark how many refs are on your roster? Like, how many could you choose from?
I think that every time handful? We did a TV, yeah, we had four or five. We had at least four, something usually five at every TV. And then when we would do big pay-per-views, it'd be, you know, guys from both referee gimmicks, you know, there'd probably be 8 or 10 of us there.
When you did the pay-per-view, would there be a head ref, or would you come and then the head ref
handle, Raw? I'd handle the Raw guy, which was always Earl. He handled the Raw stuff, and I handled the SmackDown stuff. Yeah.
So you would designate based on who you're familiar with.
Uh-huh.
All right, brother. Another one in the books, man.
All right, man. That was fun. Some, good questions, too.
We got some barbecue. We got some good Eddie Guerrero stories. We got some.
Oh, yeah. I got the moon in Germany. The moon over Germany.
The moon over Germany. You soccer kicked the West Virginia guy.
Man, I was Joe Bad on that one.
Joe Bad.
I sucker kicked him, I guess.
they wanted you to be mayor afterwards. So you were good. Good.
Man, I knew. I thought for sure I was in jail, naked with a towel wrapped around me. Man, like, oh, my God. Here I go. In Huntington, West Virginia.
Well, dude, great stuff, man. Always a pleasure talking to you. And as always, thank you to all of the ad-free shows, Top Guys and Top Gals, all of y'all for leaving the questions. This is so much fun answering your questions. We never know what you're going to ask Mr. Patrick, and we never know what he's going to tell you. That's the beauty of this show.
Yeah, some of the questions spur different memories. They always pertain to the question, but it's kind of close to it, you know, but it just kind of pops in like, oh God, that made me think of this, you know, and some of them I just got to tell, some of them I can't.
That's the deal. Also, as this drops, May 8th, 2023, Nick, what's going on in Deep South, my friend?
Well, let's see. I got on the 13th, we have a show in Franklin, Georgia that we're doing. You know how I like giving young guys opportunity, and you know, there's certain people that I have openly spoke out on their skills. On this particular show, Skrilla the Great is going to be taking on James Storm.
Whoa.
Versus Skrilla the Great on the 13th in Franklin, Georgia. And there's more. There's going to be, we had to go through some changes because a couple of guys canceled out because they had to go to do a TV for one of the, they're under contract with different people and they work shows, but they got called into a TV and they got pulled off of ours, which it turned out great because now James Storm is coming in and actually it was kind of he's a little bit bigger name than what we had. The other kid's a name, but he's still building his name. And James, you know, it speaks for itself, and he's looked great right now. And I think that him and Skrilla the Great will have a tremendous match.
How can they get involved in that? Where can they see it? How can they get tickets? What can they do?
You're going to have to contact our website at deepsouthwrestling.com, and I will try to put more information up. I don't know about the ticket link because it's a different show that we're running with a sponsor. We have a sponsor that's out there that's running this show, actually. I don't know that either. I have my
Franklin, Georgia.
Yeah, it's in Franklin, Georgia. I couldn't tell you the name. I'll find out and we'll get it out. We'll get the information out. It'll be on our website because the guy that's doing my booking and my promoting for me, he's the one that's handling this. They got a sponsor that's we're working rock and roll. Robert Gibson's going to be on there. And
really?
Yes. And he's going to have a surprise guest come in for his partner because Ricky was going to be, Ricky and his son was going to be on the card, but they're the ones that got called to go to, I guess it's the NWA that they're working with.
Kerry Morton. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Kerry's their champion, their junior, light heavyweight champion, junior heavyweight champion, something. Yeah. But anyway, he has to go do a show. I forgot where, but it's on the same night as us. So Kerry was going to wrestle Skrill of the Great for the title. May
13th, James Storm, Skrill of the Great. Yes. That is going down at the GPAC.
There you go.
Georgia Performing Arts Center, 481 Main Street, Franklin, Georgia. If you want tickets, let me get you. I'm going to get you a little phone number here, but you can get it on. I found this, by the way, at Deep South Wrestling on Facebook. So type in Deep South Wrestling on Facebook, and you can check it out.
We've got ladies. We've got luchadors. We've got James Storm and Skrill of the Great. It's going to be an awesome card.
If you want tickets, 770-832-3330. That's 770-832-3330. The easiest way, go online to Deep South Wrestling on Facebook. Give them a follow. You can see everything that they've got going on. You can see all their latest events, all their upcoming events, and keep up with Mr. Nick Patrick while he's not handling the mailbag with us.
That's right. I'll have that title. I keep saying I'm going to bring the title, and I got it over. It's like about 6 acres away from me. I forgot to bring it over here, man. I'd have to go running through the dark to go get the title, man.
I'm sitting on 1.2 acres right now that I have to mow, so I can't imagine 6 acres walking across.
Yeah, well, we got three lots together, you know, mom and dad's house. It's a little run.
We're gonna show it all at nighttime in the summertime.
There's a swamp like behind the house of the people live across the street. So at nighttime, you got to watch where you're walking out there in the grass. You know, you can be looking down low, watching what might be crawling on the ground, and a big old buck come running at you from out of the woods. Or there, I've actually seen some large cats and foxes and coyotes. And man, there's all kind of stuff come out of those woods.
Georgia's got some critters, brother. I can attest to that.
Yeah, I hope no bears come out of there, man. I can't outrun, outclimb, or outswim one of them.
All right, go find them on Facebook and on YouTube, Deep South Wrestling. Nick, always good to talk to you, man. This has been
great talking to you, man.
Thank you again to all the people on Ad Free Shows for sending us questions. These were great questions this week. Had a lot of fun answering these. And we'll see you again in 2 weeks. So make sure when you see this episode drop, go drop in the comments your questions for next episode, and we will get to them later. For myself, Cassio, and for the man, the myth, the legend, the star here, Mr. Nick Patrick, have a good time. Thanks for joining us here on The Mailbag with Nick Patrick.